In Bhaktira Samitasindhu, Rupa Goswami has given, he gives Samanya Bhakti in the first Lahari, first Vibhag, first division has four chapters. So there is a Samanya Bhakti, he gives the general definition of Bhakti and its characteristics. Then there is Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. So the second chapter of Bhaktira Samitasindhu, that gives the basic steps of Bhakti. Okay? So first step of course is the dangerous one. Says Guru Pada Shreya Tasmat Krishna Diksha. So bhakti begins with Guru Pada Shreya. So that does not happen most of the time. So therefore bhakti mostly does not begin.
We keep waiting till bhakti begins.
No, it begins, you have to begin it. Because you have to take Guru Pada Shreya.
What is this word?
You have to take shelter of a qualified guru. And if you don't take that, then you can chant, you can do puja, you can do parikrama. Bhakti does not begin. Because you don't have the foundation, you are building a big mansion. Yeah, dangerous. Why is it dangerous? Because you become proud that I am a bhakta when the foundation is not there. So there are many people who go around thinking they are devotees when there is nothing at the floor. So therefore reading is important, because it is not, I am not saying, Rupa Goswami says that how does bhakti begin? Guru Padashraya Tasmat. Tasmat means therefore. Therefore signifies a reason, cause, that if you have an itch that you want to be a devotee. Right? If you don't have that itch, he says, don't worry. You can continue whatever you are doing. He says, if you have an itch to be a devotee, therefore, then what you have to do? Guru Padashraya. Then you can take shelter of a guru. And Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. Then you take Diksha and then you take Shiksha. Then you have to study three things. If you can do these three things, then life is done. And if you don't do these three things, you do one of them, usually. You take Diksha, and then there is no Siksha and no Padashraya. And then you do all other things. You are doing Parikrama, right? So go on doing Parikrama. So you go on round and round and round and round. Round, and round. So then you are on the belt highway. You are going on a belt highway, means it's a nice road and you are a good driver, so you drive, but you don't go anywhere. You remain on the highway only. So that is called parikrama. Yeah, in England, in America they call it belt highway, we call it parikrama. So some people are doing parikrama every day. Right? Every day they don't go and do parikrama. And what happens from parikrama? Of course, good health. It's a nice exercise. You walk 5-6 kilometers or whatever, you know, it's healthy. And if you do barefoot, you also get some benefit from the stones or whatever. You know, your acupressure. So it's very healthy. Recommended, actually. So that is, you understand now? So that is the bhakti which he is talking about. You see, we use words, and words have meaning, and meanings change with time. So when Jiva Goswami was using the word bhakti, he was using in a different sense than what we are using. It's like we use the word love. So the way Jiva Goswami uses the word love or prema, that is one way. The way we use that is different. But then we can misunderstand. We think, I know this. Right? So we get confused. So you have to actually get into the mind of the author. What does he mean by bhakti yoga? Not what I mean by it. We have our meaning. We have our meaning of prema, and we have our meaning of bhakti and bhav and all this rasa. That is another very nice word. Actually, it is even nice to hear the word rasa. And then rasika is even more nice, right? It has got some, what is the word, mellifluous? Yeah, it's just a sweet word.
Reminds me of
rasgulla. Yeah, rasgulla, rasa, some taste. Even if you don't know the meaning, even if you hear it, even if you don't know Sanskrit, Hindi, just the word rasa, rasika, rasa. It sounds very nice. So, but we have to not just hear the sound, but what is the meaning behind it? So that is very important. So you try to understand that this, what Jiva Goswami is saying and what Bhagavatam is saying, this is not some ordinary thing. When he says, anartha upsamam shakshat bhakti yoga madhokshade, it actually uproots the anartha. That is bhakti. Immediately. Even the sadhana platform. Forget about the prema. When it is prema, then we can't even say what it is like. Then even God is under control. But even the sadhana bhakti actually wipes out all anarthas from the heart. See the power of bhakti. It's very powerful. Because it is God's internal potency. That's why Jiva Goswami says that what to speak of bhakti, even bhaktyabhas has power in it. Just semblance which looks like bhakti is not bhakti. That also has power. Just like if you see a snake made of rubber or plastic, that also causes some scare, some fear in you. You don't feel like touching even if, you know that this is a plastic snake, still you can have some kind of fear. Because it's a snake abhas. It's not a snake. So bhakti is like that. So scary for the anarthas, that anarthas become scared, just like you become scared by seeing a plastic snake. The anarthas become scared of bhakti like that. They even see a shadow of bhakti, they leave. He says, oh my God, now bhakti is coming. We better pack up.
Can you give some example of bhakti abhasa, like the
appearance
of bhakti?
Bhakti abhasa is like, you know, the story is told in Bhakti Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami tells a story that there was a temple. And temple aarti is being done, pujari is doing offering. Right? You know, temple they make offering for the deities. So when he was making the deities, one mouse will come. Mouse likes food, you know that? But one day that came, the food was not there, and there was this ghee which was burning. So he went up. And he wanted to eat. Mouse can also eat the ghee wick. So he was trying to eat, but it got stuck in his teeth. So now what to do? His mouth is burning, so he starts jumping up and down because of the pain. And then he died. So now this was taken as an aarti. You know, like when you do aarti with the lamp, it goes up and down. Yeah. So because of that he got benefit.
Okay.
Next life he was born as a queen. Because of
he did not know he was doing a
No, he was in pain. His life was in danger. So that is the effect of bhakti abhas. Okay. So let's continue. So then he says, yat karam bhir yat tapsa gyan vera gyast yat yogena dan dharmena shreyo bhir itrairapi sarvam mad bhakti yogena mad bhakto labtenjasa. So whatever benefit you can derive As Bhagavan states in Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever may be attained by execution of prescribed duties, penances, cultivation of wisdom, renunciation, practice of yoga, offering of charity in accordance with scripture, or any other means of ultimate welfare, is easily attained by my devotee through engagement in bhakti yoga to me. If at any time my devotee should desire heaven, liberation or my abode, he can attain these. So this is Svarga Parga Madhame Katanchid Yadi Vanchati. So Malati make note, in the footnote there is a mistake in the transliteration. Yogena Dana Dharmena, second line should be N and not M. Jagdananda ji, how the...
Kasya dushanam
jayate.
Dana,
not dama. Maybe somebody took it from somewhere. Okay, so it is clear that bhakti can award you everything. Because bhakti is as powerful as God Himself. So what God can give, bhakti can give. And of course a devotee does not want anything. Because devotee is doing bhakti to attain prema. So he is not interested in other benefits. Because why settle for less? Then you can get prema. Why go for anything else? Because everything else is inferior to prema, right? Now you understand. Everything else is inferior to love, even in the material world. You can have wealth, power, position, but it does not equal to love. Because without love, all these things are useless. So therefore, a devotee is the smart guy who does not settle for anything less. He only asks for na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagdisha kamaye mam janmani janmanishware bhavtad bhakti rahetu ki tvai. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I don't want any of these things. Because what is the value of those things? So therefore he says, my devotee, he says, yadi kathanchid, if sometimes a devotee may ask for these things for doing service, not that he has any need for this. Athva anarthasya sansar vyasnasya tavat sakshadapi avdhanena avyavdhanena upsamanam sammuhadi dvayasyatu premakya swiya phaldvara. So he has actually more. By contrast, methods such as the intuition of the self, identity with Brahman, jnana, depend on bhakti for their fulfillment, as shown in such statements as the following. Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudashyate Vibhuklishyanti Ye Keval Bodhalabdhaye Tesham Asau Kleshal Eva Shishyate Nanyad Yathasthula Tosha Vikhatina. So jnana destu bhakti shapekshatam meme. So other paths, they depend on bhakti. Therefore this is a prayer of Brahma, Krishna. O Almighty Lord, those who undergo pains to attain realization of oneness with the Absolute, giving up the most beneficial path of bhakti, gain only labor and nothing else. So Shramayevihi Kevalam Tesham Asau Kleshalaye Vashishyate. Only suffering, nothing else. At the end of the day, what do you gain? Only suffering. If you don't perform bhakti, what is the end result? Nothing. You can see anybody who is not doing bhakti, see what happens in their life at the end. Only frustration. Vishada Yoga. The first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Yoga of Dejection. So the end result of life of human beings who are not engaged in bhakti is dejection. That's all. Nobody dies satisfied. So bhakti is the only one which brings fulfillment. So this is Brahma is saying this. Brahma already knows this. He is the grandfather. He has got four heads to think. So he says, giving up the most beneficial path of bhakti, gain only labor and nothing else. Like those engaged in threshing, coarse husk devoid of grain. So if you take the chaff and you beat it, then no grain will come out of it because there is no grain in it. So all other paths devoid of bhakti are like that. Do lot of exercise. But what is the end result? You can get some peace, some satisfaction, but it is not unending. So then Jiva Goswami gives an alternative meaning to this, anarthopsamam shakshat. Says another meaning of anarthopsamam shakshat is that sadhana bhakti directly counteracts the miseries of material existence, meaning that it does so without obstruction or without any intervening agent. So that is the meaning, that however it is only pure love of God, the mature fruit of sadhana bhakti, that can counteract the two fundamental faults of bewilderment and misidentification. So, shoka moha bhayapaha, earlier it says. So, bewilderment being forgetfulness of inherent self-identity, and misidentification being the assumption of phenomenal self tied to the material body. Thus, avidya is expressed here as it was before. So, avidya therefore is bhakti yoga. Avidya means the process. So, Jiva Goswami has set his ground very clearly. And then he is going to expand on this. On avidya, he will do very lengthy analysis in Bhakti Sandarbha. And on Prayojana, very detailed analysis, what is prema. And about Sambandha, he is going to talk from in the next three books.
And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when we hear about the qualities of sadhana bhakti, we hear that it kleshakti removes the miseries and it bestows auspiciousness. And then the root klesha is avidya. So from that section it seems that sadhana bhakti can remove avidya. But here Jiva Goswami is saying that this root problem, bewilderment, is removed only by Satya Bhakti, so I was
coming. Yeah, because he's talking that it is completely uprooted by that. Because when it is said removed, does not mean that before prema, it hanging all completely and then suddenly it is removed. But what it means is that just like the sun starts rising, the darkness is dispelled. But then complete light comes, then there is no darkness. So that's what it means, that when prema comes, then they are removed without any trace. Before that, some traces may remain. So that's what it means.
I was also wondering if you wouldn't mind elaborating on this first statement here about sadhana bhakti has love of God implicit within it as its mature fruit. I'm a little confused.
So basically, bhakti is only bhakti.
Right.
It is only for our understanding that we have explained sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, all that. Bhakti is bhakti. But because of our disqualification, we don't experience it. So basically sadhana bhakti is not that bhakti is going to become mature. Although this is how it is explained, and that because we are used to that kind of terminology, that you are doing sadhana, so now bhakti is becoming more and more intense. In the beginning it is like the sugarcane juice and then it becomes more and more thick. But really speaking, it is bhakti is bhakti, but we are not qualified to have an experience of it because of our avidya. So as our avidya is dispelled, then bhakti is revealed to us in that proportion. So I give sometimes example that suppose there is an iron piece and it is covered with thick mud, and then there is a magnet nearby. So the iron piece may not feel the effect of magnet's pull because of its covering. But when the covering is removed, then gradually it starts feeling the attraction. And when it is completely removed, then it will go and join with it. It will become one. Then there will be prema. Right? So that's why in Hindi it is called chumbak. It's called kissing. Chumbak means a kisser, one who kisses. It's called chumbak. Chumbana means kissing. So, but if somebody has to kiss, then there should be no obstruction in between. So that removal of that obstruction is the sadhana. So therefore sadhana bhakti actually already has bhakti in it. So either you say that bhakti is covered or we are covered. Krishna says yoga maya samavrita, I am covered by my maya. So it's like when the cloud comes between you and sun, you say sun got covered. Actually sun is not covered, it is you, your vision which gets covered. If you go above the cloud, sun is free from any covering. So we get covered. But we don't like to say we are covered. It is more appealing to say that sun is covered. So that's bhakti is like that. Okay. So now anuccheda number 47. Prema for the Purna Purusha self-manifests out of its own prior state as effecting means. At purva deva priyojanam cha spashtayitum purvoktasya Purna Purushasya cha Sri Krishna Swarupattvam venjayitum granthafala nirdesh dvara tatra tad anubhavantaram pratipadayan aha yashyamiti. So now he wants to show that what is the fruit of this sadhana bhakti, which is prema. So that Vyasa, he said, says this in the 147, where he says, yasyam vaishruya manayam krishne param purushe bhakti rutpadyate punsha shokamoha bhayapaha. So next, to make evident the ultimate attainment, priyojana, as discussed previously in Cheda 45, and to affirm that the Purna Purusha mentioned above in 174 is in fact Sri Krishna, Sut Goswami reveals another of Sri Vyasadeva's direct perception in the state of Samadhi, which is specified by Suta as the ultimate fruit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the verse number 4 it was said apashyat purusham purnam, but it was not clear who is this Purna Purusha. So here he opens that. So he says yasyam vai shruyamanayam krishne param purusha. So param purusha, Purna Purusha, same thing, means Krishna. So that becomes now clear that what Vyasa saw was not some avatara or Vishnu or Narayana, but he actually saw Krishna, who is the Supreme Swayam Bhagavan. And so two things are accomplished in this verse according to Jiva Goswami, that Sut Goswami is saying that number one, the Param Purusha which he saw was Krishna. And number two, that this sadhana bhakti leads to prema. Prema becomes manifest. So for that reason he speaks verse 147.
Just curious, I understand the point that Purna and Padma are the same. Is there any reason that he's picked a different word in the Krishna Parama Purushi, or is it just...
I think it's probably according to the Chanda, sometimes he uses Krishna Purna Purusha and Krishna Param Purusha. But the meaning is same, because Purna has been. So in this verse, the word bhakti, so it says bhakti premaha shravan rupaya sadhan bhaktiya sadhyatvat. In this verse, the word bhakti refers to pure love of God, because it is the final attainment, sadhya, to be brought about through its effecting means, sadhana. The development, the devotional practice of hearing. So bhakti prema shravan rupaya sadhan bhaktiya sadhyatvat. So again, when it is said that this prema is a sadhya, sadhya means which is attained through sadhana. So sadhana is like cause and sadhya is the effect. So it is not again in the sense of cause and effect as we see in the material world. Because really speaking, sadhana and sadhya are same, but just a manifestation, appearance of it. Usually when we have some ingredients, then you mix them together, make a compound, and then the outcome comes from that. So that outcome is dependent on that. But here it's not in that sense. It's actually, the sadhya is also existing. It is nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. So sadhyata, it's production or its making up or achieving is not that it is produced by something, but it actually manifests. Prakatyam just manifests. Therefore Jiva Goswami makes a statement here. The verb utpadyate is generated, because he says bhaktir utpadyate here means love of God self manifests. So, avirbhavati. So therefore this idea that bhakti is produced is not, although the word is used here, utpadyate, and usually the word utpadyate means, generally it is used in the sense of production, but utpata also means coming up or manifesting. So it manifests, but again it manifests does not mean that it was already there. That is another problem. So some people say that bhakti is already there and then it just manifests by doing sadhana. No, it is not there. Then we don't need anyone external source for it. If it is already there, why do you need anyone else? So what is the need of guru and parampara and all these things? Not needed then. So it is not there. Because it is intrinsic potency of Bhagwan. It is with Bhagwan and with the Bhagwan's devotees. So it has to come from them. It cannot be in the jiva, which is tatastha shakti. And if it is there, then we don't need, because if it is there, it cannot be covered by Maya, then jiva cannot be covered by Maya. The very reason that jiva becomes covered by Maya is that it does not have bhakti. If it has bhakti, then it cannot be covered. So you have to make this point very clear, because this is also one confusion quite prominent. So bhakti is not inherent in the swarup of jiva to begin with, but it comes from devotee. So that is the meaning of nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata, that it becomes prakat, manifest in the heart. then tasya anusangikam gunam ahar shokaiti. Sut Goswami also describes a concomitant consequence of the appearance of divine love, namely that it destroys all lamentation, illusion and fear. The implication being that even the subconscious psychic imprints of these mind states are destroyed. So therefore Jiva Goswami makes it very clear here, atra esham sanskaropi nasyati iti bhava. So we have the sanskaras, right? And the sanskaras are what driving our life. They are the little programs inside our chitta. And they are the one which are influencing us. Depending on the type of sanskara I have sanskara of fear, I have sanskara of anxiety, I have sanskara of, you know, some other problem. So we get all types of phobias, depressions, stress. These are all because of the sanskaras inside. And this programming is done in childhood. Childhood is the time when programming, just like when you get a new computer, then what do? First you load it with programs. Then you start using it. And then depending on the type of programs you have loaded, then the computer works like that. So when child is born, it's like getting a new computer. Then the baby is programmed for next 6-7 years. So for 7-8 years, the baby gets programmed. And then for another 80-90 years, those programs run. And you don't know this. So then you all look, you're always looking for the source of problems outside. That you said this, you did this, you looked like that, you traveled like this. But actually it is the program inside which is making you run all the time and doing all these crazy things. That's how life runs. So this is the baby programming. So there are various ways to deal with this samskaras. Psychotherapy is one. Psychiatry is another one. They give you some pill. Right? Or then psychotherapy, they tell you to do some exercise, write a letter. So do all these types of things, but the sanskaras does not go away, by the way. Sanskara remains. Because it's a program. Unless you delete the program is not going anywhere. And these are very strong program. Actually they are not really program, they are like viruses. So there is a rasa and there is a virus. So in Sanskrit virus is called virasa. It is in English that they pronounce it wrongly. So you know the word rasa, and in Sanskrit there is another word called virasa. Virasa means?
Virus. Virasa means virus.
Yes. So virasa means which is not tasty. Like you eat something,
distaste.
And distaste. So virasa is the distaste. So that is the virus. So as long as you have virus, you cannot have rasa. Right? So if you have a distaste in your mouth, how can you have a taste? So then there is no rasa in life. Life is full of virasa and no rasa. So if you want rasa, you have to get rid of the virasa. These viruses, these programs inside. And how to get them out? Bhakti yoga. Anartho samam shakshat bhakti yogam adhokshaje. It is only the bhakti yoga which has the power to kick out these viruses from your chitta. So this is what Jiva Goswami says, that atra esham sanskaropi nasyati. That even the trace, this impression, these viruses of these things Shoka, moha, bhaya, this fear, delusion, anxiety, these are the outcomes of these viruses. They are not themselves a problem. There is a problem is deeper. You can remove somebody's lamentation, somebody's depression, writing letter, doing some kind of therapy. But after some time it comes back. Because the psychotherapists themselves have problems. Psychotherapist always needs a psychotherapy. There is no psychotherapist who does not need psychotherapy, right? They always need. Because when they are trying to remove others' program, they get implicated in it. They get the virus. Because they also have it, not that they get it, it's also inside them. So here, this is the way to remove it, Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is the topmost psychotherapy. Complete clean. It's just like you do formatting of your disc. Disc formatting.
Reformatting.
Reformatting, right? Formatting, reformatting.
Well, if you have stuff on your disc also, you have to reform.
Okay, reform. So this is the reform. So you got to reform your chitta by Bhakti Yoga. And then you have nice programs inside. Rasa. Those are the rasa programs. Right? This is what Rupa Goswami says. Right? He says that Ubha Sanskar Ujjwala. Yugal Sanskar Ujjwala. You need that samskara. You need that rasa sanskara. Then life full of rasa. No distaste. It's a very scientific process.
So, other like so-called positive samskaras, so other positive samskaras, if I can name them like this, also virasas.
Ultimately,
yeah.
They are also virasa. Because these positive are other side of the negative only. They are two sides of the same coin. Because why do you have these negative samskaras? Because one day they actually gave you something positive. One day they helped you from some danger, from some fear. So you actually protected yourself. And then it became, now it is not needed, but it is hanging there. It's like you take some favor from somebody, then the guy comes to exploit you. So when the help is needed, then that guy was nice. Now the help is not needed. Now he's just sucking your blood, and you can't do anything with it because he's like a leech now on your back. So that's how it is.
But the term virasa, is it equally used with samskara, with the term, or
no? No, virasa.
It means distaste.
Only it means distaste.
Okay.
We are just making that analogy. Like just like you have distaste, like this is a distaste. Okay? Yes.
This is kind of a prominent topic that comes up in quasi-spiritual circles, but I think it has some relevancy to bhakti also. Just learning how to live with the sort of corrupted karma that you have until you obtain freedom from the obstruction created by the samskaras. So it seems that devotees, in my own personal experience and vicariously also, that we also suffer in that department a lot. Perhaps we've not begun bhakti, but even persons who have bona fide gurus, they also have this problem. And they either go away from bhakti or they experience a downfall in bhakti or whatever, even after having bona fide gurus, even after following for some time. So I received the email, there's going to be some mind seminar for the next 3 weeks here, right, with Mother Jessica. Looking forward to that. So I guess I was kind of wanting to hear this side because we also hear that bhakti removes the corrupted karma also, bhakti arsamrita sindhu. And yet we see many devotees struggling psychologically as a result of corrupted karma. for years and years and years and years and years, and then we often will downplay things like psychology. I know I certainly do that. And what is this? What is this Gyan Yoga, Karma Yoga, psychology, just bhakti? And then in the meantime, devotees are suffering on and on and on and on. They're also not getting any rasa. So anyway, I was kind of wanting to hear your perspective on this sort of scenario, situation.
So you want my perspective?
I do.
Okay, here is my perspective. So the truth is that if you actually have a genuine guru and you have actually taken shelter of genuine guru, then this problem goes away. But that's why I said in the very beginning, I was not joking when I said it, that this thing does not happen. So either the guru is not genuine or the disciple is not genuine. Means he's only making a formality of accepting a guru but not really taking shelter of the guru. If you actually take shelter, then this problem goes away. Of course, when we say that prarabdha karma goes away, it does not mean that now you are not going to get fever or diarrhea or any of these things. No, they will happen. You may even get cancer. But psychologically you become free. Because the real problem is at the mind level. Because God, for God to arrange everything for you now, remove your prarabdha karma, it is a very complicated thing. Because your karma is involved with many, many people. Your karma is not just your karma. It's not that you are walking and you get trip and you hit your head on the ground. And that's karma. Your karma is also involved with another 50 people, say. So if your karma, prarabdha karma is nullified, then what happens to, because they are also involved with you. So then they also have to be made free from that. So it is not done like that. What it done is that ultimately whatever happens externally, the influence is at the level of mind. Because the ultimate result of any action is sukha or dukha. Right? That's why Krishna says, sukhe dukhe same kritva. Remaining balanced in sukha and dukkha. So that balanced state of mind comes when you actually surrender to a genuine guru, truly. Then you become balanced in sukha and dukkha. Because then you understand that this happiness is also coming from God and this suffering is also coming from God. You don't become attached to any one of them. Not that I like happiness, but the other one I don't like. No, you don't become attached to happiness also. It is coming, okay, that is God's will. He's sending me some nice food. I take it, but I don't become attached. Next time I'm only getting moody. So I eat that also. And I don't cry. So that is how you transcend it. That those situations which have to happen, they may still happen. But you will not be disturbed by that. You will continue with your devotional activities. And therefore there is no question of downfall. Once you accept a bona fide guru, genuine guru, truly, in the true sense, there cannot be downfall. It is not possible that now you will leave bhakti and go somewhere else and do something else. That won't happen. Unless, of course, you commit some big offense. That is a different thing. But normally speaking, it won't happen. So that's why devotees actually don't have downfall. Devotees do not have downfall. It is very rare that a devotee has a downfall because of some offense. Because there is no other power that can deviate a devotee. So this, take the example of Prahlad. Why the story of Prahlad is given in Bhagavatam? That he is the most vulnerable person as far as downfall or deviation is concerned. Because he is 5-year-old kid, helpless, means helpless. He's not very big in physical or mentally developed or anything like that. That's the meaning of 5-year-old kid. You know. So, and then his father, he is the greatest demon, most powerful person in the three world. That even Indra and all, they scared of his name. If he raises his eyebrow, then all these big gods there pissing. Literally. Yeah, he was so terrifying. So now this Hiranyakashipu is trying to tell to his son Prahlad that give up bhakti. And he will have all the opulence. He will be a successor of his father. He will have all, whatever material thing is possible is available to him. Basically that's what it means. But he did not do that. Why? Because he sees that giving up bhakti is more painful than accepting any of this. So all the suffering which he went through, that was not as painful as the thought of giving up bhakti. That is the significance. Because you can give up an activity, either if that activity is more painful than another activity, so then you give up that and you do that, or you give up an activity, other activity is giving you more pleasure. So if you have an activity which is less painful and this is more painful, then you give up, or the activity which is more pleasurable than this, then you give up. So for him, all these pains of beating him up, putting him in fire, they were less painful than giving up bhakti. And the pleasure of bhakti which he is getting, that is much more superior than the pleasure of being a successor to his father's opulence. So this is to signify that bhakti therefore is apratihata. Mr. Sut Goswami says, ahetuki apratihata. Ye atma samprasidati. Samprasidati means it brings complete satisfaction to your mind, yourself. There is nothing else which can give more satisfaction than bhakti. So therefore, one who even contacts a little bit of this bhakti, even in the sense of taking shelter of a genuine guru, then it won't happen that that person will give up. And if somebody is giving up, then there are only two reasons, that either the person has committed some offense, but then he will come back. Once the result of the offense is gone through, then he will again come back. Or the person has actually not taken really shelter. So this is the meaning, that when one becomes free from prarabdha karma by taking shelter of bhakti, means that mentally he becomes stable. Because prarabdha karma, the effect ultimately comes at the level of mind. External situation cannot force you to give up bhakti. External situation may force you to not perform a specific act of bhakti. But no external situation can force you to give up bhakti altogether. Because bhakti is also smaran, ultimately manonivesha, fixity of mind on Krishna, that is the essence of bhakti. So that nobody can force you to do. There is nothing externally which can do, except offense, that can make you do that. So, bhavopi bhavamayati, Krishna preshta paradita, Rupa Goswami says, otherwise not. Because there is nothing which can do anything to bhakti. So is this clear? So that's why I'm saying that this bhakti, which Jiva Goswami is describing here, try to understand what he means by the word bhakti. And because we have some preconceived ideas, then we may not really understand what he's saying. So that's why I'm stressing so much on this. You may think, why I'm not moving in this book faster? Because I want that you get the concept clear. And then it will be easy to move, just like in Nyaya, you know, we made our concepts clear and now we can move faster. So I'm trying to make the concept clear, because I know very well the misconceptions that I'm quite familiar with. So once these misconceptions are removed, then you will actually start understanding and appreciating what Jiva Goswami is saying. Because he is saying something very profound, although he is writing very small. He just made very small statement. Atresam sanskaro api nashyati iti bhava, right? He doesn't say a big thing about it. But actually this is a very profound statement. It is like a sutra. His writing is very terse, but very deep, very important.
Condensed.
Very condensed. So if you can get this tattva, because the book is called Tattva Sandarbha, then your doubts will actually disappear. Because things will become very clear to you. Once you will understand sambandha, abhidheya and prayojana, even in tattva sandarbha, then it's a matter of details. But even tattva sandarbha, if it is understood clearly, then things will become very, very, you know, explicit. So that's what Jiva Goswami is, he has done. For me it is amazing what he is doing. The way he starts this whole book and how he brings it out is just marvelous, extraordinary, genius. Adbhut. Adbhut means something which you have never seen before. Aho. This is what, when you say aho. Yes. You had something, question? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's about this fixity of mind and the acceptance of a bona fide guru, and then the effect and the danger is that also this losing this fixity of mind because of offenses. So then, because you were saying different levels, right? This psychological level, which is also external, and then this fixity of mind is just a level of a state of, let's say, is still external, not really part of the realization that we are not the body but the soul. And this can be taken away.
Yeah, actually in bhakti all this is not so much needed.
Okay.
Really speaking, in bhakti the first step itself is enough, this Guru Padashraya. If you can have Guru, then you have everything. Don't need anything more than that. Then you can go into all the Siddha Swarupa and meditation and this and that. Really speaking, if you have Guru, you have Krishna, you got everything. Life begins there and it ends there. So this is a concept which is very, very unique, which is, I always say this, that this is the unique contribution of India, unique invention of India, this Guru thing. Because it is not found anywhere else. How to know God? You can have your own path, you can do all types of things, but they have made it so simple. So, Acharya Mam Vijaniyat Nav Manyat Karichit. This is Krishna says himself, that know me to be the Acharya. So it is Krishna who comes as Guru. Krishna comes as Guru. Guru is a human being. Krishna is also a human being. Krishna did not pose himself as God. He is God, he has all powers. But if you see his Leela, then he is like anyone else. Once in a while he did things. Other times he was just a nice guy. So, this principle of Guru, if this can be understood and one can actually devote one's life to the Guru, then you don't need anything. Whether you will get this bhava, that bhava is not needed. Life is made with that. Simple. All perfections come. Guru is the key to the spiritual world. So if you have that key, then this whole Vaikuntha is open to you. And if you don't have that key, then the mansion is in front of you, you can do parikrama. But you don't enter inside. So that is what Guru is. And when that key is there, then you are inside, then all other things happen. So those are matter of details. So Jiva Goswami is also not saying anything about Guru and this, that he will talk in Bhakti Sandarbha. But if you read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then Rupa Goswami also says it only once. Right? Guru Pada Shretasmad, and then he quotes 2-3 slokas from Bhagavatam. But after that he is talking about the bhava and rasa and all these things. And this is what people like very much in this study. And there is so much debate going on whether this sakhi is superior and this bhava is superior. And right? So then they are putting all their energy. So this is what I mean doing parikrama. Not having the foundation. And so many times when people ask question to me on this topic, I say, I'm not expert on this, please find somebody else, you know. Because there's no point. You don't have the basics. So what is the use of talking to you about rasa and this sakhi and that sakhi and this swarupa and then what happens and this happens. So this, you go on having all these details, but the fact is that you don't have ground under your feet. So first you have your Muladhar Chakra. First you have your foundation. Okay? And then we can talk so many other things. So that's why if you see the story of the great personalities, they really don't talk much about it, but it is all because of their fixity with the Guru. So the Upanishads are also saying, right? Yasya deve para bhakti, yatha deve tatha guru.
Oh, we just learned that.
So you see, it is not something which is an invention of Jiva Goswami or our Goswami. Upanishads are saying, it's exactly the same thing. Yasya deve para bhakti, yatha deve tatha guru. Tasya ete kathita hi artha prakashante mahatmane. Then all this becomes prakasha. All this, the prakasha means light comes. Then everything becomes clear to you. Otherwise, most of the questions which people are asking, they are asking only because they don't have this foundation. And when you have this foundation, all these questions are automatically answered. Because then the prakasha comes. So this is the key factor in Bhakti Yoga. Then all these questions of prarabdha karma, this karma, otherwise they are saying when you take diksha, then Guru is taking 1/4 of your karma, half of your karma. Some people are saying 50%. So maybe it keeps on changing sometimes. Percentage goes up and down like bank interest. Lundley.
Maybe you already answered that question, but so you said if someone accepts a guru in a right way, so I was just wondering what do you mean by right way and what does it mean to accept a guru in a wrong way?
So accepting guru in wrong way means that you accept the guru and you say he is my guru, but you go on doing what you are doing. Means you continue to maintain your independence, thinking, independent plan, independent ideas. So that is wrong way. And right way is that you match your heart with the heart of Guru. So when you do that, then that is the right way. It's very simple. Because that's what we are planning to do. What is the meaning of love? Love means oneness, right? When you love with some person, you actually want to match your thoughts, your ideas, your actions with that person. And if you are not doing that, then there is no love. So that's the meaning of wrong way and right way. So otherwise we maintain our independence and then we say that we are surrendered to the Guru. So then of course it remains some kind of formal relation, but the result which is expected does not come from that. Prashant, you are asking me to stop or you have a question?
Suppose the Guru has many disciples and he don't have time to entertain disciples. So what a disciple can do in that way?
Well, at least ask the Guru that I have this problem, what solution you have for this? Approach the Guru with your problem.
Even he don't have that time to...
Well, then he's not doing his job.
Yeah.
Because, you see, just like you produce children, and then you don't take care of them. So when you produce a child, it is your responsibility also to bring up the child, right? Take care of it. So same way, if you take disciple, then you become responsible. The post of Guru is not some pleasurable thing. That you become a Guru, you have disciple and you are getting worship. That's not the job of Guru. Actually, Guru is a problematic position. Because you have to deal with so many disciples and take care of them. So it's a big responsibility.
Suppose Guru says that on my behalf,